Today on the Hooligans, we are discussing Australia. They had a fantastic game against Turkey. Should the United States be a little bit worried? Is this a trap game? I'm a little concerned.
Plus, Brazil, you stink. What the hell is going on? It's a World Cup. This is when you're supposed to turn it on. A little too much caipirinha and not enough joga bonito. What is going on? And of course, we got to talk about a bunch of stuff with Rapido Reactions, but primarily we talk about, yo, Japan. Damn, when'd you get this good? That and more today on the Hooligans.
We are finally back home after a wild trip in LA, after the New York Knickerbockers won us an NBA championship. I mean, this is a soccer show, but we might have to do a hard pivot, bro. This was what a weekend. USMNT.
This has been one of the most insane sports months I've ever had in my entire life. Bro, Arsenal wins a championship. The Knicks do a double, by the way, because everyone forgets the NBA Cup. The Knicks win the NBA Finals.
The Knicks won the Carabao Cup. We all saw it.
Yo, put some respect on that competition. And can I just say, and the U.S. men's national team looked good? Bro, what a wild month.
A 4-1 win. Just truly remarkable. But we're back home. LA was absolutely fantastic. I had a blast. I got there a little bit earlier than Alexis did. Got to do some fun stuff with Puma and learn about a whole new boot. It's kind of crazy. I'll have something on social media, on Soccer Hooligan social media about it. Did the live Total Soccer show out in Los Angeles. I did stand up
with the boys, man. I feel bad I didn't get to hang out with them.
They're all doing well. Graham, Ryan, and Taylor, and Joe Lowry as well.
Yeah, Joe was there, by the way. I saw the photos.
The crowd was also fantastic. Shout out. There were so many Hooligans fans that were also in the crowd, showed a lot of love. It was also shout out to the producer. Somebody, this was how I know we got some diehard fans, because somebody from the TSS crowd came up to me and they were like, man, Christian, so happy to meet you. This is so cool. I love the Hooligans. Hey, what happened to the audio on that first live show? And that was literally the first.
Cool.
So this is how you know they are absolutely locked in. They're like, yo, I was waiting, but we got it fixed in like 3-4 minutes. So apologies for that first show. Did stand up for the crowd. They were awesome. A lot of love we were getting out in Los Angeles, and we hosted a watch party. This was the thing that we were not able to announce until it finally happened. But we hosted a watch party at the Bellwether in Los Angeles. That was also a concert right afterwards. So it was the Hooligans featuring for Addison Rae, the TikToker, but Addison, the singer.
I realized I know who Addison is. I know who Addison mm-hmm. Rae is, but I've never really heard her music, not really the kind of music I listen to. But yeah, I found out who does, because at some point, a bunch of gruff U.S. men's national team fans started getting pushed out of the way by some very thin blonde women in short skirts, and what I found out are called kitten heels. So,
okay, oh yeah.
Yo, I was like, yo, why are there a lot of West Village girlies in LA right now?
At one point, the crowd changed quite dramatically from fans, like from Pulisic jerseys to 13-year-old girls mushing people in Pulisic jerseys.
Yeah, no, only you thought they were 13. By the way, those were 20-something-year-old Christian. Oh, okay. But that's how long you've just been in dad mode. You've just, like, your brain's shut off to anyone without wrinkles.
There were very little girls, in my opinion. I don't know. They seem like kids.
Let me tell you something. I dare you to stand in front of them at an Addison concert. You're going to get shoved out of the way, like, you're going to get CONCACAF'd out of the front row.
So we had an absolutely great time, and we're going to be doing 11 of these total. So we're going to be traveling quite a bit. Seattle's up next, so we're going to be
all 11
there.
Host cities of the U.S. We're going to be hanging out there. while the games are happening. Are we going to be in the same city? Yes. Are we going to be at the games? Absolutely not. We're going to be close to it in a music
close.
Venue hosting an awesome watch party. It's so dope.
Yeah, with,
thank you
with
to,
a bunch
thank
of different
you for everyone who had us on it because it was so dope.
Yeah, yeah. It was incredible. So, so we'll probably be in your city. That's the one thing to be on the lookout for. All right.
Don't ask us for tickets. They're private.
No, that's the one thing. We can't hook you up. I'm sorry.
I wish we could.
All right. But let's get started with the World Cup. First weekend of the World Cup in the books. Oh, my goodness. Well, as we're recording right now, there are a couple games going on. Ecuador and Ivory Coast are currently playing. But let's get going. Welcome to the Cooligans, everybody. My name is Christian Polanco.
Hey, what's up? I'm Alexis Guerreros.
And I mean, look, every match has had their own like a storyline and surprises. We're going to go through a bunch of them. We already had several matches out in this World Cup. But let's start with Group D. Group D has been turned upside down. The United States and Australia sit atop of Group D while Paraguay and Turkey try to figure out what the hell happened. USMNT face Australia next, and I try to explain why this might be the trap game for the Americans.
This is the top topic.
So Australia had an incredible victory against Turkey. I don't think anybody expected this. We all were saying, and everybody was saying, every expert, every pundit was that Turkey was the strongest team in this group. On paper, it made complete sense. And even on paper, you would think Turkey should have either won this game or at least gotten a result. Australia went 2-0. But when you look at total shots, 30. Turkey took 28 shots, obviously commanded the possession, 7 shots on goal. There was some unbelievable stops by the goalkeeper, the Australian goalkeeper Beach, Patrick Beach. He was incredible and needed to have that kind of a game for Australia to win that game. But defensively, they constant clearances. I mean, Turkey, I think before the World Cup kicked off in the group, you would probably have said had the probably the best kind of like offensive options, or at least the better chances to score over the United States. The United States, I think, turned everything upside down after the game they had against Paraguay. But if Australia can maintain this kind of just the defensive presence, just goalkeeper having an incredible game, I'm a little bit more concerned. I wasn't concerned before the game against Turkey, and I'm not necessarily concerned. I'm not worried that the U.S. will not move forward in the group, or you know, they could still get out of the group. I feel very, very confident about that. But I think this game might be a surprise, as we have already been surprised by, I think, both of these matches in Group D so far.
Yeah, I mean, I would caution you against worrying, to be completely honest with you. I am not worried at all, in the sense that I'm not worried more. You know what I mean? This match didn't add to my anxiety about the game against Australia, which I still think is going to be tough, and I still think it's going to be difficult. So I don't want anyone mincing my words. But here's the thing. I'm less worried now about Turkey than I was about Australia.
Sure.
Turkey looked trash. They looked wildly unprepared. Hold on. You said 28 shots. Look at the XG. That's 1.19. Yeah, they've got a ton of individual talent. But one, how dumb are you, Hakan Çalhanoğlu, to say, oh, we have more quality than them, we're going to be pretty dominant? Why would you give anyone that bulletin board material before a World Cup match? Let's start there. So now, Turkey are coming in extremely cocky. Arda Güler looks already done with the tournament. He's so frustrated. He's thinking, is one of my grandparents from any other nation? Is it possible I could play somewhere else? The manager of the team was begging Arda Güler to have a better, you know, put on a better face. He's like, buddy, yeah, you're in 4K and 4K. You know what I mean? Yo, if anything, this stats right here make me worry so much less about Turkey. They are, to me, right now, they should be more scared of us than we ever will be of them. As far as Australia is concerned, and to your original point, yeah, okay, Australia looks better than maybe what we had played against when we played against them. But let's be honest, what they showed was an incredible amount of heart and that they can spring an attack at any moment. You're kind of already prepared for that. We kind of prepared for that against Paraguay. In fact, Australia kind of plays the same game as Paraguay. And if I'm Australia, I view the U.S. versus Paraguay match and I thought, oh no, our plan A isn't working. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a cakewalk, and I don't think it's going to be easy. And I don't think that Australia can't possibly eke out a draw or even sneak a win. But under no circumstances, after the way the U.S. played, no team has played as good as the U.S. or looked as good or as fluid or as united as a group, other than maybe Germany. I'm not scared. I'm not worried in any way, shape, or form. The high that I felt after the game against Paraguay did not come down even a little bit. I will say their striker has a lot of individual talent, and if they get him the ball in open space, he can clearly cause some issues. But other than that, all right, prepare for that. Maybe Tim Ream sits this one out. You know what I mean? Maybe we bring in an Austin Trusty who could literally just shadow this guy all over the pitch. I'm not worried at all. And I didn't look at that and go, oh man, Australia, look, they gave up 28 shots, dude. And our strikers are Balogun, or as I found out, he's actually pronounced Balogun. Balogun is a much better. I mean, call me if
it felt,
yo,
it felt uncomfortable immediately.
I was like, I'm not gonna go put on a dashiki right now. Flo, call me if that's not the way to say it. And I'll
imagine he stayed at Arsenal, he would be a Balogooner.
Oh, there you go. Oh my god, I don't even have the mare button in my apartment.
I didn't post, Carter.
I'm looking at that and I'm like, bro, I'm thinking Australia are way more scared of us than we ever will be of them. That doesn't mean they're not going to come in inspired. Nobody on the U.S. say that you're more talented and are going to dominate, please.
Right.
Nobody put a microphone in front of Gio Reyna. But come on, I mean, we've got a sub scoring a Travella, bro. Pete Kanejma. Nah, be worried about us, dog, because you're going to do the same thing Paraguay did. You're going to bunker down. I'm not scared.
Okay. I mean, look, I was impressed with the fact that the U.S. Were able to figure out and break down Paraguay pretty easily, right? I mean, even, again, those moments when Christian Pulisic attacked, you know, the going in between two defenders, wasn't nervous. I mean, we just need more of that for this game against Australia. But, yeah, looking forward, we're looking at what, you know, possible lineup again. I don't see any changes being made. And then when you look at
that might be made is Pulisic, if that halftime injury proves to be a little bit more than what we thought it might be. I wonder if if there's something there, even a thought of something there, do you potentially sit him and only use him if needed? Do you think we have enough talent to get through Australia?
Yeah.
With how good Gio Reyna played, would you replace Pulisic? Obviously not as a you wouldn't bring him in as a striker.
You would have to change the formation. Reyna could only really come in for Tillman, I think.
For Tillman, yeah.
Putting him up higher. He's not pacey enough. And I don't really think he's that great, like 1v1 against people.
I also don't want to see
going
Reyna
up
wide.
Against fullbacks.
Yeah, I don't want to see Reyna wide. I want to see him centrally. But yeah, I mean, that's a conversation for another. You know what? Put McKinney out up front. I mean, he's done it before.
He does it all. Yeah.
I mean, to me, I'm like, now you can kind of tinker. I mean, the fact that Australia has a 2-goal, if I'm not mistaken, I believe they have a +2 in goal differential. That to me would tell me that, man, all right, you know, but they got pretty close. It's unfortunate we gave up that extra goal. We saw the score. We're seeing the score here from the previous. I mean, from the friendly. Bro, look at the names on the left. Haji Wright and Christian Roldan. Most of this team, by the way, didn't even make the World Cup squad.
Okay, so you're telling me Christian Roldan needs to start this game. I hear you loud and clear, Alexis. Okay.
Buddy, I mean, he's like old hat. You know what I mean? He's going to see Australia and go, nah, I've done this before.
No, this is, look, you would still have to favor for the U.S. here. But then there is a little bit of concern. I think I was impressed with how well Australia handled that pressure. But if the U.S. can not only score, but score first, I think that changes the dynamic a lot. Same way with Paraguay. I think the early goal got them a little bit rattled, and they just could not recover from that. It took way too long for them to kind of figure things out, because they were better in the second half, but couldn't. They got the one goal, but they still. You could just see the fatigue. You can see they were just struggling a little bit, which is why, you know, they probably don't close down on Gio Reyna. He's able to duel Trivella, right, as the last kick of the game. We're looking at the Australian predicted lineup or expected lineup.
And yeah, Torre really not, and Iracunda are the two names that I look at. They're going to pose a threat against our back line. But I mean, look, and you know, shouts to Adam Cleary, who you know is in the U.S. He just did a video sort of breaking down the tactics of the U.S. team. And by the way, he said that this team looks good enough to hit the quarters, possibly a semi, which is what I said in the reaction episode, by the way. And even you thought I was a little too lit. Turns out other people are getting just as lit as me. Okay, it's not just Korean dudes and Japanese dudes eating barbecue in the Midwest and in the South. Turns out I'm also getting lit off this America, you know what I mean? But when I look at one of the things that he brought up, and I think we kind of understand that, is if you're going to have both of your fullbacks bump forward, you're going to leave a lot of space, and you're going to leave a lot of opportunity for guys like this guy, Nestroy Iracunda, to be able to attack. And he's really good with the ball at his feet. He makes really smart movements, and he has that move of like that extra gear that he could find to just create that little bit of space against a defender. Well,
that goal he scored was fantastic. Touch of the ball around the defender and to still continue his pace to you know take that shot near. I mean, it was a fantastic goal. As I'm watching it, I'm just like, Tim Ream, please don't be in this position where you have to chase this guy. Like never, not once.
I want to remind you that at one moment against the Paraguay match, Tim Ream was on all fours and headed the ball. Luckily, it hit him.
He slipped. That's not his fault.
But he was on all fours. And that moment said to me, like, it puts an anxiety.
sure. That is fair. Also, Cote d'Ivoire just scored against Ecuador. Amad Diallo with a goal in the 90th minute. Wild moment. Okay.
I kind of figured that because my buddy just texted me. I took the tie. Great. A draw, if you will.
This is the game is happening, U.S. Australia happening on Friday. Like we said, we will be in Seattle getting to experience that. I'm really, really looking forward to that. But going to be a good game. And you would imagine, especially on the West Coast, Australia should have a lot of support. A lot of Australians are, you know, in California, in northern northwest of the United States. A lot of them live there as well. So it should be an interesting game, right? So we're looking at the schedule for the next U.S. matches, the 19th for Australia and June 25th against Turkey. And I still see no reason to think the U.S. can't top this group. That first game, I think, changed the dynamic. I mean, you see how everyone is talking about it, but I think it just changed the not just the dynamic, but just like, man, these boys are more confident than we kind of maybe gave them credit for, right? I mean, we were interviewing so many of the players before this World Cup and asking about the pressure and all this other stuff, but man, they are. I mean, like you said, outside of Germany, no other team has looked as good. Even, you know what?
I mean, Japan looked really good, but we'll talk about that in a minute. But I also want to give a shout out to Tim Ream for not even looking at that phone. If you know, you know. I don't need to go into it, but if you know, you know. But I look at this and I'm not going to sit here and say, yo, that's two easy wins, right? I'm not going to say like, yo, two W's coming our way easily. But I mean, if you look at it, level your expectations of what you thought before coming in, Turkey, I think, has dropped down a notch in what I expected. Maybe they turn it around. Obviously, anything can happen. Good match against Paraguay, and suddenly we're talking differently. But Arktoglu, I hope I'm pronounced that correctly. I mean, he looked absolutely out of sorts. At one point, they weren't even really playing with a striker. They were playing a 4-6-0. And it was like whoever had an opening in front of goal and some really last-second defending and some real strong, like last-gasp defending, I should say, from Australia kind of saved the day for them. I looked at that even. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to, maybe they play to the opponent's level, but bring that to the U.S. and Australia. I think now this is going to be a more fun game. It's going to be a little bit more open than what I was expecting. I was expecting this going to be the kind of, you know, such a dogfight that we're going to do it on the lawn. You know what I mean? Like the lawn of the, you know, all right.
All right. I don't know.
You know what I mean.
All right. So, a lot to look forward to. So, yeah. Way more excitement and pressure going into this game. But now, with those 3 points, it definitely changes the dynamic quite a bit. Are Brazil serious contenders to win the World Cup? I do not think they are. Morocco outplayed them on kind of, you know, basically every metric that matters. But this squad is looking a little bit concerning, and Ancelotti has a lot of changes to make. So firstly, a 1-1 draw is not necessarily a terrible result, but that first half for Brazil was a little like worrying. We keep bringing up the friendly against France, which is like really realistically the toughest team they're going to face. And they still had a lot of trouble figuring out Morocco. My first thought immediately, especially after watching Igor Thiago, the Brentford striker, miss an incredible opportunity in the 14th minute to
a header. That could have been.
He just has to. He doesn't even have to aim it anywhere, just at the goal. It's most likely a goal, and he just like whiffs it and doesn't get a clean strike. I think Endrick should be the starting striker. He's not as tall. It'll be a different type of game, but I think he's more dynamic and faster and a better way for Brazil to play instead of having a strong like hold up guy up top. Who's again a very good striker? Have a just more pacey striker that can worry the defenders a little bit and create a little bit more space. But it's one of these games where I think both teams could probably more Morocco, but both teams could have been like, man, we dropped 2 points. But I would feel like for Morocco, this feels more like a loss than just like we're happy we got a result here.
And not just that, I think Morocco probably looks at this and goes like, all right, that's not the best we could have played. I mean, I think Morocco takes a step back from where they were last tournament, but I don't think it's this egregious of a step back. I also think if you're a Brazilian fan, you need to hear this right now. Neymar is not going to fix this. You keep thinking Neymar is going to fix this. When we were at the friendly, everyone kept saying, we need Neymar. Bro, Neymar is not going to help you defend. There was a moment where Brahim Diaz made a pass that completely cut through your entire squad. And, mm-hmm. and if it wasn't for terrible shooting, you know, they would have scored another one. I'm so worried for Brazil. Carlo Ancelotti is not the manager that fixes this. Blaming the fact that the players are based in Europe is not going to fix this. There is something that, you know, and you make a good point by bringing Endrick in. You sort of maybe start to rely a little bit more on those individual players and their potential individual brilliance, because that's the only reason you got a point out of this. Because Vinny Jr. scoring that goal completely saved this from me it being two people talking the way I'm talking about Brazil. Brazil should be embarrassed by the way they've not only gotten through qualification, but have walked into this tournament. And after the first match, yes, it's Morocco. Yes, it's a team that won AFCON. And yes, it's a team that clearly knows how to play, plays well, and have players that are all playing. Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of players on there that have put themselves in the shop window for a big move. But if you're Brazil, you walk away from this going, dog, what happened to us? R9 was in the stands. He was not watching Brazil. He was watching a bunch of Brazil shirts. But in that, there's not a lot of players that could have played on his Brazil. That is not how Brazil is supposed to play. That is not what Brazil brings to the table. And if it wasn't for Vinny Jr., a guy that most people think should be out of Real Madrid and doesn't deserve to win Ballon d'Or and, you know, is all of this and all of that, a moment of individual brilliance where he said, fine, I'll do it. He Jalen Brunson'd his way. Shouts to Jalen Brunson, by the way. He Jalen Brunson'd his way into saving that game for Brazil. Brazil looks like they're not going to get... Brazil looks like they're going to get grouped.
I mean, that yeah, that would just be absolutely insane, given the group that they're in. It would be look, Morocco's a tough team. It's hard to judge them too harshly, but we have a lot of expectations for Brazil. Yeah, but
did you see? Okay, fine. Sometimes you play the game and the balls don't go in. That's fine. Sometimes your shots are a little off, or sometimes the other team kind of figures you out, or maybe their goalkeeper stands on their head. But if you watch just highlights of just the possession and all the time that Brazil touched the ball, would you look at that and go, this is a team that's capable of winning the World Cup?
No, I mean,
no, they look bad. Yeah. And by the way, when was the last time we said that about Brazil? It feels like in our lifetime, Brazil's the team that, like, they look so relaxed at a World Cup. They're chilling. They're having fun. They're smiling. They're playing pranks on each other. They're out there without their shoes tied, like Ronaldinho used to be. They're cash because they know they're better than you. This team is not individually better than you.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is also Scotland being first in the group is just what a wild season. I mean, I know it's only
Scotland
one game.
Scotland is up, dog.
Scotland, McGinn got his goal. This is a
Tartan army, bro. Just a Tartan army, bro.
It's a shame. We sort of like you see Brazil and you even see this lineup and you're like, all right, Showtime Lakers, right? Like, let's have some fun. I mean,
I think
Neymar could definitely bring some of that, but like, now the decision to bring him to the World Cup, even though he's injured, feels a little goofy, right? Like, it's just like, I understand, like, yeah, he's a legend and all this other stuff, but we're not here to do favors for any players. Like, everybody should earn that spot and should be able to contribute in some way. Who knows?
I get your point. I think you make a good point, but here's why I don't agree. It's Neymar and it's possibly his last World Cup, and if you bring him and it doesn't work, what are you going to do? You know what I mean? It's not like they're going to lose the final because of him. You know what I mean? But if you don't bring him and you look like this, everyone in Brazil is going to say what all those Brazilian fans said in Gillette Stadium when we left that building after France absolutely demolished them, which is, we need Neymar. We should have had Neymar. Okay, well, now he's here. And can that man defend? Can he save the midfield? You know how Neymar can save you is if he decides to not be Neymar and he decides to be like a regista, you know what I mean? Just like a deep-lying holding midfielder that can make line-breaking passes for counterattacks. That's the only way.
Yeah, I'm fascinated to see what he's going to look like. I mean, he hasn't played with Brazil in quite a while, and we'll see what the contributions look like. How does he gel with the team? He was injured in leading up to the World Cup, so he didn't really train with the team. I mean, we saw him. He was
Neymar
on the sideline. Yeah.
Everyone gets out of his way. You know what I mean? It's Neymar.
So we'll see. I mean, you also got to think of, like, he's a player that gets fouled a lot. Like, how long can he even go through this tournament if he's recovering from an injury and he's not, you know, we know he's not going to be 100% when he is playing. So it leads to just a lot of questions surrounding the decisions for his inclusion. But again, these players should... I mean, you see what they do at their clubs.
We've had this conversation. And other than Endrick, who kind of turned it on at Lyon, Vinny, who, you know, hasn't had the best season, but you kind of know what you're going to get. Plus, it's Ancelotti. They have a good relationship. I look at Martinelli. Look at Guimarães. Guimarães didn't have the greatest of seasons, and I think he's a very good player. But does he really fit the profile of what you think of in a midfield Brazil? Look at Paquetá. Lucas Paquetá has taken a complete step back.
Guimarães, there's nobody else and other Brazilian midfielders that could take a spot, even though
Guimarães is
dealing with some injuries. But no, I mean, look, it's not, yes, this isn't the 2002 team, right? We understand that. I think we're setting the bar quite high, and maybe it's a little bit unfair for Brazil, but
up the population of Brazil real quick while you're saying this, because this is
they have quite a lot of people.
Yeah, I get it. They're a very massive country.
So but again, yeah, you the I mean, players like Rafinha, Paquetá maybe is like on the fence or on the bubble of like, you know, who should be the really that right midfielder
right, but
for.
We weren't saying this 2 years ago. And that's what I mean. Like, there's something is going on. It's like, what happened? It's been a while since I've seen Space Jam, but the talent has been zapped from the stars. You know what I mean? And that's sure. what this Brazil looks like, bro. By the way, 213.5 million people. I honestly believe, and this might be the hottest take I've ever said on the show, and I apologize to everyone, but this also includes Neymar. So maybe it's not the hottest hot take. If they would have filled this team with just players from the Brazilian league, they'd be better than they are right now.
I completely disagree.
Give me the Brazil Seleção Liga A, whatever. I can't remember what their name is. But give me their all stars. And that to me, obviously, not your Memphis Depay's and whatnot. I think that would, because at the very least, they'd probably be playing some type of relationism style tactic, and they probably would, at the very least, do what Vinny did more often. They may not be the names we know, but at the very least, they would be playing a style that reminisces what Brazil's supposed to be, and probably what would get them further in the tournament than what's happening right now. This is an abject failure by their federation if it continues this way.
Well, my expectation is if this is how they play against Morocco, as soon you would expect that they get out of the group, but as soon as they face some team of note, I can't really see them getting past them. Oh, you know, they might be a draw and they might lose in penalties. They got knocked out in the last World Cup. Yeah.
They're not going to beat Ivory Coast. They're not going to beat Japan. They're not going to beat Netherlands. Not playing like this.
Wow.
Okay. Dude, they might not beat Australia. I don't know what kits they're going to wear because they're kind of similar, but they might not. Japan is seriously dangerous in this World Cup, and if you don't believe me, just ask Virgil van Dijk and the rest of the Netherlands defenders. Have Japan turn the corner from dark horse to actual contenders? I don't know. After watching this first match, Christian, my answer might be yes. I think Japan shows you, and I know you brought up Japan as like a potential dark horse or a team you were going to watch. To me, it's very much the reason why I like Austria is like they seem to play like a club team. That's what I saw out of this Japan. And all of the stereotypes that you hear or like the negative connotations of like, maybe not negative connotations, but the things you hear about Japan that, they don't have the height across their entire squad and you could beat them in set pieces. Well, that doesn't go away. It seems like the other parts tend to outweigh, sort of a lot of the things where you can minimize their talent. Japan, to me, were the team that seemed dangerous, seemed tactically able to sort of cut through in a way where I was like, man, what's happening with the old guard? We talked a little bit about how Brazil wasn't looking good. Netherlands looked good, but they didn't look like the Netherlands of old. In fact, this was the first Netherlands team that didn't have, World Cup team that didn't have any players that played in their local league. And that's probably because Ajax has been going through a rough one, which is typically where they would have played. Japan, I think, surprised a lot of people. And also, can I just bring up the aura that these guys come through? I don't know. I can't remember the dude's name. He has like an icy thick like Cuban link chain with his name on it. And he's walking into training there. I'm like, bro,
I did not see this. No, who's this?
This is the Japan I need in my life. And their goalkeeper's born in Newark. I mean, this is a team to follow.
That is true. Zion Suzuki is a goalkeeper. I honestly thought what was impressive for Japan is the fact that they were down twice in this game and equalized. I mean, to have that level of poise and confidence. And again, Netherlands is fairly stacked with some really, really good players almost at pretty much every position. And the fact that they scored the equalizer late in the game, especially off a set piece, right? When the stereotypes is like, you know, the Netherlands are bigger and stronger, and they still found a way to, like, just a great ball that Virgil van Dijk misses by just, you know, if he lets his hair out of the bun,
yep,
that he's right, stopping that ball. So, Yeah, it does say something about again they didn't doubt themselves at all. But the goalkeeper Zion Suzuki, I thought he had a great game, and also, but the two goals that he did give up were like what I thought were perfect, absolutely perfect shots. A perfect header from Virgil van Dijk. He put a little curve on it, hits the post and in. And then Somerville scores a curling ball, left-footed, and it's just perfectly, I mean, you can't place it any better. It hits the left post and it goes in. But that was really the main day. It took two pretty amazing goals to beat Japan.
Did both shots hit the post and go in?
Yeah, the header hit the post on the right post.
Whoever bet Woodwork hit is rolling in it.
But I think it says a lot. Like the goals from Japan were, a set piece is a set piece, but still he got to the end of it. But the other goal was just like confidence, dribbling to the box, taking a shot, and the player who ended up scoring was it deflected off of him and then went in. But it says a lot about where Japan are again as a unit, and just it's a great result. You saw it, and even at the end of the game, you know how teams are like final seconds. Maybe you can get one more chance or whatever.
Yeah.
And Japan was like, nah, we're keeping this. This is a fantastic result.
Hey.
This is a fantastic result for us. We don't need to. This is probably, arguably the toughest team they're going to face in the group. And I think them holding onto the ball and not going for it kind of says how confident they are that they believe they can get out of the group after a result like that.
I think Fox on the San Antonio Spurs was like, oh, that's what you do at the end of the game. Crazy.
The Aaron Fox.
I looked at the way that Japan played, and I said, yo, if you didn't have them listed as one of your top teams, you may do that after this game, especially against Netherlands, which I think we all kind of thought was going to be by far their toughest competition.
Yeah, this is a, I was watching the post-match interview with Virgil van Dijk, and he was kind of just saying, I think his biggest disappointment was giving up a goal on a set piece, given that you have these guys that are, 6 foot, 6'5" or whatever, just big dudes and couldn't. Also, both goals for Japan were deflections off of teammates, which is actually kind of funny. Nobody was in an offside position, but the goal scorer was Daichi Kamada from Crystal Palace. Yep. I forgot who took who got the actual header, but it was, I've never really seen anything like it where your teammate is in front of you and he headed the ball he jumped and headed the ball into his teammate who was standing and headed the ball off of him. It was one of those, it was like the Michael Jordan and Larry Bird commercials, like off the McDonald's sign. It was one of those. But
It takes a lot to score on a team like Netherlands. So I think they did a good job. But I would actually say, even though it's from Newark, goalkeeper felt a little iffy to me at moments. There were moments where I'm like, he doesn't have complete, like he doesn't have to stand on his head and so on and so forth. But there were moments where I'm like, man, he seems to be a little bit more, his nerves needed to settle.
Okay. I mean, it is obviously first World Cup, right? First, I'm assuming it's first. I don't know if he's back. But he's 23
years
old.
Yeah, but he's home, baby. He's home. He's back in the U.S.
He's 23 years old. He plays at Parma. Regardless, still a fantastic result for Japan. And again, since we're going to have 8 third place teams move on in the tournament, it's still you have to end this you have to at the final whistle, you're like, we made it, right? Like, I mean, that's going to be the toughest test. And I think other teams have to be a little bit worried if they did that to Netherlands, score two proper goals. Who knows what Sweden and Tunisia have to face. All right, let's go to Rapido Reactions. We have 90 seconds to give our opinions on all the different World Cup stories. And let's start with Haiti and Scotland. You know, I was focusing on how the Caribbean countries were going to do. I want to say Haiti made me proud. I thought they played well. A 1-0 loss in your first World Cup in a very long time is incredibly impressive. So, you got McGinn, everybody. You got, what is he? What's his? I don't know how to do a celebration. The one.
Does he do this thing?
Yeah, that's how it is.
Yeah. So, I love McGinn. I love Scotland. I think Scotland brings a great vibe. But I got to be honest, you made Kodak Black sad, and that makes me sad. Kodak Black is, again, the president of Florida, if you guys don't know, legally. Right? Hey, listen, you earned the title, you got it. To me, this was probably the best. If I could have been at any match just to be in the vibes before the game, it would have been this one. Scotland and Haiti, both, what a fun group of fans to hang out with. So I'm excited for Scotland, too, to top the group, man. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder what this means. I mean, I don't know if this is necessarily a reflection on the quality of both of the teams. Who knows if they face, tougher competition, what it was would kind of look like. I mean, I'm going to lead into it. I got to tell you, I was worried about the Caribbean countries and how they were going to do. Haiti did okay.
I said three goals over under. Curaçao got one.
Very different story. So, okay, let's go to Curaçao. Curaçao faced Germany. It was a nice, it ended up being 7-1. It had a decent start. Early goal from Germany in the 6th minute. Fairly early goal from Curaçao in the 21st. And then after that, things fell apart. Germany did the revenge, the Brazil. They did it again, this time to Curaçao. 7-1 is crazy. And we just had Ilor Room on the show, and this is exactly what we didn't want for him, bro.
Well, I mean, this is what we all thought was going to happen. And against Germany, what are you going to do, right? What a tough task. But the vibes in the Curaçao section, which I think is like a third of their population, by the way. What a fun vibe to be at. I mean, this is what you want in a World Cup. And I know a lot of people are like, there's too many nations and it's garbage. I sat next to a British guy who was saying all the things you think a British guy would say. And he was like, there's too many nations and the level is low and blah, blah, blah. I go, well, for many years, I meant no England. But I think this is what you want. This can be inspired. Think of a young kid in Curaçao or in the Netherlands with Curaçao heritage who saw that first goal go, and I wish I could remember the guy's name. The vibes, bro? Nah, that would make me want to play the sport.
Livano Comenencia, from FC Zurich.
Livano Comenencia, that right there, bro, that would change everything for me if I was a kid from Curaçao. So, whatever.
My only concern about this game, you lose in 7-1. You got 5 subs in your sport. He only used 3. Coach only used 3. Come on, don't make those guys suffer like that. What are you doing?
Let those other guys get some minutes. They can't do worse than the first 11.
Okay. And last up, Alexi Lalas making some news. Mainly because the Fox broadcast, and obviously there's a lot of people we know, but there was a moment where we had Alexi Lalas, Rebecca Lowe, Thierry Henry, and Zlatan Ibrahimovic. And there's a moment going kind of viral of Alexi talking about James Corden, because James Corden is a part of the broadcast as well. And he's asking them, oh, what do you guys call him? What do you guys call him? Don't you call him a full kit wanker? And the faces on the other 3 folks, they're like, what? You can't say that. And for us, not the worst thing to say. It doesn't even register as a big deal, as a swear word.
Yeah, that's why I don't really care about this at all. You look shocked. Look, if the British folks started saying their word for cigarette, I think we would see the opposite effect, right? Or what their nickname. But to me, wanker is like, who cares? You could say it all you want. To me, it's not a bad word. So I think it's kind of silly to
babies
have,
can say it. Who cares?
It's not. Yeah, but you're on American television. The big, like, whoa, like, stop.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And by the way, Alexi Lalas has and will say a lot of very dumb things. This is barely one of them. I like this tweet right here. Rebecca Lowe is so good at her job. Her ultimate test will be keeping Zlatan from punching Alexi Lalas in the face. Here's the thing. Rebecca Lowe, be bad at your job.
if you can let a couple go by. You know
hey,
I mean?
Hey, you know what? Just give it a minute before you get involved, you know?
But shout out to Barbacast on the Yahoo Sports family for the baseball side bringing in some great soccer tweets. I think that's the biggest surprise to a lot of people. Just seeing these cast of characters together is definitely, Sky Sports and Fox, You don't really see much of an overlap.
That's funny you said that.
That kind of commentary.
Here it comes.
All right. That's been Rapido Reactions. Thank you for joining us again. All right, let's wrap up right there. Thank you, everybody, for joining us on this weekend wrap-up of the World Cup. We are back tomorrow, live, noon Eastern, across all Yahoo Sports channels, socials, everything.
And of course, our YouTube.
Our YouTube, the Cooligans YouTube channel. So go check us out there. And obviously, the pod will be available shortly after that. But noon Eastern, every single weekday, make sure you join us. We've been having a blast. We're back in New York, so we'll be back in the Yahoo studio.
What do you mean back? It's the first time we're both there.
Exactly. We will be joined by guests coming through throughout the World Cup. A lot of people are in New York, so it's going to be a lot of fun. All the cast of characters that come through and call in. It's the best, funniest soccer daily comedy show that you will have available to you. So make sure you let people know all about it. All right? Alexis, any final words?
I love you guys.
Peace, everybody.